The US, Australia and the UK have announced a major defence agreement in the Asia Pacific. Many see it as an attempt by the West to contain China's influence in the region. But will it work? And is this an echo of the Cold War? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Emily Angwin. It's a new military alliance that's got reaction from around the world. China has strongly criticised the US, Australia and the UK after they announced a new deal that will see Canberra get nuclear-powered submarines. But the alliance is pushing back against Beijing. The US Secretaries of State and Defence have met Australian officials and accused China of making expansive and illegal maritime claims. Many see the new alliance in the Asia Pacific as another attempt to contain China's influence in the region. Beijing has accused the three powers of having a Cold War mentality. Australia will become the seventh nation in the world to operate nuclear-powered submarines. We'll bring in our guests in a moment, but first, Rosalind Jordan filed this report from Washington.
The US, UK and Australia reportedly agreed to form a new defence alliance on the sidelines of this year's G7 summit in England. Washington and London will help it buy a fleet of nuclear-powered submarines. The main reason for the alliance, containing China.
We spoke in detail about China's destabilizing activities and Beijing's efforts to coerce and intimidate other countries, contrary to established rules and norms. We will remain clear-eyed in our view of Beijing's efforts to undermine the established international order.
We discussed the competition of China at a number of levels that requires us to respond and to increase resilience. This does not mean that there are not constructive areas for engagement with China. Australia continues to seek dialogue with China without preconditions.
Not surprisingly, Beijing condemned both the alliance and the submarine deal.
The export of highly sensitive nuclear-powered submarine technology by the United States and Britain to Australia once again proves that they are using nuclear exports as a tool of geopolitical games and adopting double standards, which is extremely irresponsible.
In Washington, journalists pummeled the ministers with questions about the security pact. Is checking China's efforts worth offending it or offending long-standing partners?
This is about enhancing our cooperation, our work together, ultimately about enhancing security and stability in the Indo-Pacific. It is not aimed at any country. It's certainly not aimed at holding anyone back.
The announcement of this new alliance could signal that the U.S. President Joe Biden is actively reshaping American foreign policy, bolstering new ties to deal with new threats, while telling old partners that change is not a diplomatic death knell. Rosalind Jordan for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests now. In Los Angeles, we have Peter Matthews, a professor of political science and international relations at Cypress College. In Canberra, Michael Shoebridge, the director of the Defence Strategy and National Security Program at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. And in Beijing, we have Ina Tangen, a China political and economic affairs commentator specialising in Beijing. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to start with you, Peter. As we heard in Rosalind's package, the US Secretary of State says this move isn't aimed at any particular country, but clearly this is in response to Beijing and its moves in the South China Sea and issues with Taiwan. What's your reaction to those comments by the Secretary of State?
Everyone knows that there's been this tension about the South China Sea with between the United States and Beijing and the countries in the neighbouring area. And this attempt to get Australia involved with nuclear-powered submarines for the first time is a very serious attempt to push back and balance power. So the balance of power principle. The U.S. felt that the Chinese were going a little too far in taking care of those islands and expanding some of their influence and control in that area. And they wanted to make sure the sea lanes will be left open. And it's a very important seminal action that I think will have major impact in the whole region and also globally. it's good going back to the balance of power principle, basically.
I know from a Chinese perspective, this partnership is a way to counter Beijing's growing influence in the Asia-Pacific region. Is this AUKUS likely to change Beijing's behaviour at all?
This is just going back to colonial era gunboat diplomacy with a little Cold War era Soviet type of sauce put on top of it. You know, the real issue here is I wonder how, you know, the people in ASEAN, the different countries there, are viewing this. You know, earlier in your piece, you talked about, you know, the U.S. representative said that China was, you know, violating the international norms, imposing its will on people. It's kind of ironic. Is the U.S. and Great Britain talking about this after what's happened in Afghanistan and in the Middle East? I think, as far as Beijing's concerned, it's an age of hypocrisy, self-righteous hypocrisy. And it's not going to change their behavior. They're going to continue to do what they do, and it's going to be more in trade and less in terms of trying to match everybody with this kind of war games mentality.
I do want to get to the timing of this pact shortly, but, Michael, what's your reaction to what Ina said, and does this pact make strategic sense for Australia?
Well, I think a lot of what we heard is really distraction. It's like, you know, magic is all about misdirection. Beijing has been the master at saying it's everybody else's actions, not ours, that are causing the environment. But it's quite clear that Beijing's coercive use of its military and its maritime militia and its growing military power has led to this reaction and this powerful response that's creating a credible deterrence. So let's get away from distractions about, is this some kind of blender mix of the Soviet approach and imperialism, and see it as a real hard power response to Beijing's use of hard power. That's what this is about. And it does reset the military balance, not in Beijing's favour. And I think that's why we're hearing these strange, angry reactions from Beijing.
Come on. I mean, the U.S. has 72 nuclear-powered attack submarines. China has 6. They're now enlisting Australia at the tune of about $3.4 billion apiece for a Virginia attack submarine with all the goodies. And that doesn't even begin to include what it's going to cost by the end of 10 years. You're planning to get more than a few of them. Given that your military budget is about $35 billion a year, you're going to be committing a tremendous amount into that. You know, this thing that somehow it's all, you know, self-righteous nonsense. I mean, why would China close down the sea lanes? They get 80% of their oil, 40% goes through the sea lanes. How would that actually work? It would be pure suicide. So all this stuff about balancing and marbles in your mouth about, this is a credible deterrent is nonsense. This is an economic war. Australia doesn't have a foreign policy of its own and is just relying on the U.S., which is only concerned with being king of the hill, making sure that it has the hegemony and keeping China away. Ironically, China isn't interested in the hegemonic power that everyone says that it wants.
Peter, I'll bring you in here. Your reaction to Ina?
Sure. Let's keep in mind that China has been very successful economically in growing its economy and reaching out through the Belt and Road program to other countries. And this has concerned the U.S., which I don't think it really should, because the U.S. should be working with China to help develop other economies and focusing more on the civilian development of human beings as opposed to just escalating a possible new Cold War as well. There is that danger. There certainly is. And don't forget that the U.S. and China have about $700 billion in trade, which could be enhanced if they would. So as long as President Biden makes it clear this is not an offensive position, it's strictly defense, but it appears to China and other countries that it could be seen offensively. It's nuclear-powered submarines for the first time in the case of Australia. The only other country that used to do that is Britain. The U.S. and Britain had nuclear-powered joint submarine activity, but this is really serious. It's an enhancement of the situation. I think we have to be very careful that we don't start a new Cold War with China and make it purely a defensive situation. I think both sides, both the gentlemen, the people talking a minute ago, had both really good points from different perspectives, of course.
Michael, how important is it for Australia to clarify its national interest in all of this?
Well, I think that's pretty clear right now. As we speak, Beijing is actively, by central policy direction, coercing Australia through trade, around $20 billion of annual trade. That's direct coercive decision-making from Beijing. And the other big problem that Beijing has and why its trust globally is collapsing is this enormous gap between its words and actions. So we hear, why on earth would Beijing want to constrain a maritime passage through the South China Sea right at the time when China has empowered its heavily armed coast guard to use lethal force wherever it claims jurisdiction, which is a great expanse of the South China Sea, and where it's now requesting information from vessels transiting through regions that aren't its. So this word-action gap has led to this collapse in trust, and really this strengthening of military deterrence in the region is welcomed quietly by much of the region, but not by Beijing.
Aina, how likely is China going to use this alliance to justify expanding its own military?
Well, I don't see that China is going to be putting more effort than it already is into its military budget. There could be calls from... Yes, I can. There might be calls from the War Hawks to try to enhance budget. That happened in any country. At the juncture that China announced, not in return to this, but recently, that is going to try to join the former TPP. So I think China's response is going to be economic. In terms of Australia, this idea that Australia is being constrained, actually, its monetary account is better than ever due to iron ore exports to China. There are other areas that have been affected and will.
Gentlemen, do you have any response to what he said?
This should not escalate into a total new Cold War, or even a shooting match, which would be devastating in that part of the world. If there's any kind of attempts with Taiwan, where China has already established its sovereignty over territories around those areas, and they work it out with Hong Kong, for example, then if the U.S. intervenes militarily, Australia will be obligated to get involved militarily because of this deal with nuclear submarines. So we could get to a very dangerous position. I think all sides should keep cool heads in this and really work things out diplomatically as much as possible.
I think there is real room to clarify the understanding that we have of each other, because there is a tendency for talking past each other here. And some of that can be improved by a little more self-reflection, I think. Certainly, Beijing knows it's breaking World Trade Organization rules with its coercive economic behavior against Australia. And we've heard the motivations. They're things like the fact that Australia would like to know how a global pandemic started so that we can prevent future ones. So this is all public knowledge directly traced back to Beijing's statements and actions. And a little bit of acknowledgement of the gap between words and actions would be a starting point for dialogue.
Okay, let's put the politics to a side now. I want to talk to you, gentlemen, about the nuclear-powered submarines themselves, and specifically, Michael, I want to talk to you about some of the concerns around that. Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister, said Australia is not seeking to acquire nuclear weapons or establish a civil nuclear capability. I mean, how dangerous is this going forward? And what are some of the ramifications of establishing nuclear-powered submarines?
I think the way this is going to be done in close partnership with the US and UK ensures that the US and UK will keep meeting their obligations around not proliferating nuclear weapons. And it's certainly not Australia's intent, as our Prime Minister has said, to obtain nuclear weapons. But nuclear-powered submarines are an extremely powerful military technology, and they do add to the deterrent power in the Indo-Pacific, which is a positive for regional security. The safety and environmental aspects of having nuclear submarines will be carefully managed, building on Australia's capacity to have visits of nuclear warships and submarines already, and with the close technical cooperation with our US and UK partners. So I think the nuclear power aspects of this are entirely manageable within the framework of international obligations and will be really made effective by the powerful partnership of the UK and US with Australia.
Aina, I noticed you were shaking your head there. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said that to export highly sensitive nuclear-powered submarine technology to Australia is extremely irresponsible double standards. Do you agree?
Well, I have a slightly different take. I mean, Beijing is saying that they don't like this, obviously. It's going to take 10 years to deliver one of these subs. If they're going to have a fleet, it could take more. And quite frankly, during that time, I think drones will proliferate and become more sophisticated. So for the price of, $3.4 billion purse, you could probably create a fleet of a couple hundred thousand submersible drones that could literally wait outside harbors and identify any passing submarine, if not cling to them. It'll be laughable in 10 years, quite frankly, from a technology perspective, to have these behemoths wandering around. They'll be virtual dinosaurs. But the issue for China's perspective, Beijing's perspective, is they see this as a entree into the Cold War, as a kind of World War I scenario where the U.S. is creating pacts and obliging itself to get involved. And the danger here is that you set one tinder sets off a World War III, which is what nobody wants. And I would agree with my other counterpart on that. They need to be talked. But you can't talk about saying, we're not starting a Cold War, when obviously you are.
Peter, what's your take on what Aina said? And also, I just want your thoughts on the fact that, you know, the UK and US have previously only shared stories about their nuclear defence technology with each other. And now there's this shift. How significant is that?
This is a huge step up, we could have to say, because now for the first time, a third country, Australia, has been sharing its technology. And it is it can be seen certainly by China as being something that's a little dangerous for them, because China is not as strong on anti-nuclear or anti-submarine, nuclear submarine technology. And anything nuclear or submarine oriented would be a real problem for China. And I think this is where I think the Australian person said that it's important to tone down the rhetoric and to have not talk past each other, both sides, but instead talk to each other about this and then restrain themselves. Because you don't want a new arms race like we had within the U.S. and the Soviet Union, which had to be brought under control with a lot of effort. You don't want to have that again here. And also, don't forget, wars can start through miscalculation. World War I, as Barbara Tuchman said, the historian, would start through miscalculation and misjudgment. And this can happen as a tinderbox situation could arise here. So I do believe that it's important that we make sure that both sides and the leadership and the diplomats work hard on this to ensure that this does not get out of control or spark something that we would never be able to bring back under control.
On that, Michael, is there an expectation that if there is some sort of major conflict over Taiwan or the South China Sea, that these units would be deployed in the midst of that?
I don't think there's any doubt, really, that if Beijing acted to use force to try and change the status of Taiwan, that America and partners and allies, including Australia, would become involved. And that's a matter of national interest and regional security. And I hope that's understood in Beijing. In fact, it's these kinds of scenarios that are leading to this unfortunate need to increase military deterrence. But I wanted to mention one point about the idea that, firstly, nuclear submarines are somehow going to be dated technology. I think that's a scenario, but there's no real evidence to show that's the case. But this partnership, the Australia-US-UK partnership, has nearer-term capability benefits too, including in the undersea domain, which is an area of disadvantage for Beijing. So in the interests of not having miscalculations, I wouldn't want Beijing thinking that nearer-term additions to capability aren't happening under this partnership. They will.
Michael, just on the discussion around timelines, former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd says, and I quote, Australia is being left strategically naked for 20 years because some are suggesting that this submarine program may not be available until 2040. Do you agree with his sentiment that we will be left strategically naked for 20 years?
No, I don't. I think the sooner these submarines can turn up, the better. But as I say, there will be a series of other important capability improvements well before that time frame, including in the undersea domain. I would be shocked not to see effective unmanned undersea capabilities shared between these important partners. And indeed, also I would expect to see them in the Quad partnership and in important trilaterals like the US, Australia, Japan one, and of course with South Korea. So there's a growing range of capabilities that add to the deterrent picture in our region, and that's well before the first of these submarines turns up.
Ina, China has told the alliance to abandon its Cold War mentality or risk harming its own interests. Is that a direct threat?
No, I mean, they see it as a Cold War. There's going to be a response. It's probably going to be in trade. But I think what it means is that China will pursue its economics more regionally, and that will have an effect. Remember, it's the largest market out there. Australia depends on it. The U.S. Needs it. Europe needs it. Great Britain needs it, or you'd think they did. But, I mean, politics has played a role here. You know, obviously, Australia's the prime minister is reeling from this scandal involving one of his ministers and some mysterious money that showed up for his legal funds. Boris has reshuffled his cabinet. Biden is under attack because of the handling of the Afghan war. So, and, you know, things. But there's one other aspect that I want to mention here. I mean, Boris Johnson made this thing about three English-speaking nations getting together. I don't know that that's going to sit well, not only with China, but with the rest of ASEAN, this idea that somehow English-speaking people have a, you know, some sort of superiority and should be taking on the world and teaching everybody. This smacks of colonialism and racism.
Well, we only have 1 minute to go of the program, so I just wanted to get some final thoughts quickly. Peter, your response to Ina and perhaps a solution going forward.
Absolutely. We need to avoid that impression, and I think Boris Johnson's statement was not that well taken. And instead, there should be cooperation, diplomacy, and a handle on not talking past each other, as mentioned before, but talking with each other, both sides, and to ensure there's no miscalculation. And this is a very serious step forward that went, and it has to be brought under control. So I would certainly look forward to that.
Well, we appreciate all of your insights and this robust discussion, as always. Thank you very much to our guests. We have Peter Matthews, Michael Shoebridge and Ina Tangen there. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is AJInsideStory. From me, Emily Angwin, and the entire team here, bye for now.